ऐसी मशीन लगाऊंगा इस साइड से आलू घुसेगा उस साइड से सोना निकलेगा।
This is episode 95 of Attention Plus with Arnab Ray, recorded on the 9th of August 2020. I am Vikram Mohan. Both of our other podcasts on Foursquare are back from their break. Binge On has a new episode out where Raj and I look at world cinema covering Turkish, Spanish and Korean. And WhatsApp Geeks discusses news from the tech world, of course. So head over to foursquare.net to listen and subscribe. And another update about the podcast awards. Well, we didn't make it. Didn't expect to, honestly. But as the cliche for losers go, it was an honor to be nominated. So thanks to all those who voted. It really means a lot. And now your host, Arnab. Hey, Arnab.
Hello, Vikram.
Arnab, last week, at the beginning, you mentioned that, you know, you had already spoken whatever you had to about Sushant Singh Rajput. And nothing beyond speculation for you to contribute if you spoke about it. So what has changed since then and why do you want to talk about that today, among other
things? So today I want to talk about the Ram Mandir and about Sushant Singh Rajput, because these again continue to dominate the headlines for India. The reason why I want to talk about Sushant Singh Rajput and the thing that let's try and turn this around and say what I don't want to talk about. I don't want to speculate about what is going on with the case of Sushant Singh Rajput, because I simply don't have any information. And I do not want to add to the gossip mill and the media circus that the media has made it. That's obvious. So if the demand is that why don't you talk about your theories of what happened to Sushant Singh Rajput, honestly, I don't think that that's something that I should be doing. And it's not something that I have any unique insight into, other than summarizing the different conspiracy theories, all of which are conspiracy theories. But what I wanted to talk about in the first, in the episode before the last episode, I talked about Anurag Kashyap. So this time what I want to talk about, is specifically something which Rajdeep Sardesai said, and why it's not just a question of Rajdeep Sardesai. You know, what he said was in an interview with Lallan Top, he says, Sushant Singh Rajput was not that big a star. And Vikram, please play that clip over here.
Will do.
So that exact clip plays. And I just wanted to comment on that. I wanted to comment on the fact that besides the fact that there is really, I don't know what Mr. Sardesai's criteria for bigness is in every respect, but I do not think, and I think that kind of hits the core of why Sushant Singh Rajput continues to be an issue. It's not just about politics. Of course, everything in the world is politics, but it's not just that. And that's really what I want to discuss today. But before I come to that story, I wanted to talk a little bit about Ram Mandir. Again, this is another topic that I have talked about before. And for those of you who haven't heard what I've said or didn't read what I wrote, the thing about me is that on principle, I do not think that history can be changed by renaming streets or taking down monuments. And that holds true both for Confederate statues or statues of George Washington in the US or the Babri Masjid in India. I just feel that history cannot be taken down, and history doesn't change just by taking down the emblems of history. This is my personal opinion. And the only thing that happens is that historical wrongs cannot be righted by essentially doing a control Z, because it's too late. Justice is something which makes sense only for the generation, only for the person to whom injustice was done. You cannot have restorative justice 400 years down the line. It will always be subjective, and there is no good way that you can have justice hundreds of years after the unjust act was done. This is my opinion. And even if it can be done, taking down monuments, taking down buildings is the cheapest cop out for doing that. This is usually a means of people asserting their current authority more than anything else. And what happens is that in order to right a historical wrong, another historical wrong ends up being committed. And there is a mandir was torn down to make a masjid. besides the severely indoctrinated, that is a very self-evident truth. And this is not the only place, let's just point out that this has happened in India. So this shouldn't come as a surprise. But then it's also true that everything was built on top of something else. So how long back will you ultimately go? At what level is the statute of limitations for historical wrongs? Does it run out? And the question is that there isn't any. Once you get on the slippery slope, there is really nothing which prevents you from going straight back to the Big Bang, really, because everything else is an arbitrary demarcation. So that's always been my personal view about this sort of justice, which is usually taken, which is usually the victim of the justice is usually a building or somebody's statue. I feel that, for instance, for Winston Churchill, it's important that everybody knows that Winston Churchill was as big a genocidal maniac as Hitler was, perhaps even more. But that doesn't mean we should start taking down Winston Churchill's statues. I think it's more important that we keep Winston Churchill's statues, point to it, and say, there goes a person who committed genocide. That is, for me, is more important. The fact that you have an Oscar-winning movie, which doesn't even, and coming from the new woke Hollywood, which is all about representation and diversity, that this Oscar-winning movie does not even for a single second talk about. This is like making a movie about Hitler, which does not talk about the Holocaust, by the way. In the case of Hitler, you can do that because everybody knows about it. But in the case of a biopic of Winston Churchill, they decided not to do it because I honestly feel that the guys who made the movie also didn't know. In that case, it's important that awareness of history is more important than taking down the statue. It is the awareness, it is to educate yourself about what these people did is essential, not as a way of apportioning blame or not as a way of then taking out on their descendants, but as a way of understanding how we as a civilization don't end up repeating the mistakes of history. That is the ultimate aim of history, to learn from. It is not a court of law. That's the difference between history and a legal argument. And unfortunately, with this whole thing, we end up conflating. That's my personal opinion. But what I wanted to talk about, and I've talked about this before, so I just don't want to repeat that again. But the slew of articles that I ended up, you know, the most prominent of them being written by Pratap Bhanu Mehta in Indian Express. You won't find Ram here in terms of the Ram temple. Now, this is a very good opening line for an emotional piece ruining Hindu fascism. You know, I get that. I get that rhetorical device. But honestly, please stop pretending that you have the same kind of emotional attachment to Ram as Karsevaks and for whom this temple has any significance. Okay, people should stop pretending that it's not my Ram in the temple. First of all, you don't have any Ram like that. Let's just be really, really honest about it. Now, I'll give you a personal example to explain this in case people accuse me of being in the, how do you know about Pratap Bhanu Mehta's, what his stance on Ram is. I think I've having read him for many years, I think I kind of know. It's not the same, Ram does not have the same kind of emotional connect that it has for a Karsevak or for whom this has any sort of meaning. Like, for instance, for me, you know, my favorite time of the year used to be Durga Puja. But the goddess does not mean the same to me as it means for my mother. My mother would cry. She would cry while listening to Mahalaya. Mahalaya would make her cry. It would never make me cry. Because it did not create in me that emotional resonance that it has from my mother, because my mother has a deeper connection to Hindu faith than I do. It's just been the way I have been brought up. It's just the way I am. It's not that Durga Thakur does not have any meaning for me. That's not true. For me, it's a celebration. For me, it's fun times. For me, it's memories. It's not the religious part of Durga Puja that is appealing to me. Of course, it's a different thing when I see people insulting Durga Thakur, because I feel that it's insulting my traditions. However, I don't feel what my mother feels for Durga or Saraswati or Lakshmi. I just don't. And if I have to pretend in order to make a point that we both, you know, that is not my Durga Puja, then I'm being disingenuous. And it's patently obvious for anybody who knows me that it's not true. And this is a rhetorical device I see all over my timeline for people. And again, for me, I mean, that's the thing with the Ram Mandir. I don't understand it, because for me, honestly, Ram doesn't mean much at all. First of all, I grew up in Bengal, where it's not a very Lord Ram-based Hinduism that we are exposed to. For us, it's Ma Kali, it's Ma Durga. Those are the idols that we grew up with. So honestly, Ram, for most of us, growing up in my generation in Bengal, is a lead character in a great epic. That's all. And here's the thing that I want to touch on, and I touched upon in one of the things that I wrote, is that since I consider myself a liberal, not liberal within air quotes, but a true liberal, I also understand that just because I don't have that emotional resonance with certain observational aspects of Hinduism because of the way I was brought up, doesn't mean that other people don't or cannot or should not, or that it's wrong for them. That is the fundamental tenet of liberalism, that you can coexist with people who don't see the world as you do, as long as there is a basic understanding of the ground rules of engagement. That is really the basis on which the social contract that forms societies exists, that we are allowed to disagree, that there doesn't have to be a homogeneity, even within the same religion, even within the icons of our religion, and even within the sub-identities that exist within every religion. So this is important, that just because I do not feel Ram, or this is not my Durga, if this thing happened with a Durga temple, I wouldn't write this piece, because I would know that the reason why this temple is being constructed, it's not being constructed for me. Now, you can say, well, why should this temple be constructed? Well, it's been constructed because that is the democratic decision of this country. The fact that this has been the BJP's primary agenda since the 1980s, essentially, and that the BJP have been voted with increasing mandate in two elections is the only validation that is required, that the people as a democracy want this. Now, you are free. You are free to disagree with this, absolutely. But you are free to also write an article which says, this is not my Ram. I'm not saying that you're not free to do that. Obviously, you can do that. But the Ram temple has been something which the Hindu majority, obviously, in this country have voted for. And they have voted for, and if you deconstruct the reason for why they have asked for this, it is the fact that for decades, the core Hindu identity as a political means of mobilization has been treated as something which is illegitimate. That this is an identity which is wrong. Everybody else gets to keep their identity. But when Hindus keep their identity, it has been shown to be wrong, fascist, something that is inimical for the very idea of India. And the fact is that you cannot keep on. It is just a question of pragmatics. You cannot keep on telling a very large group of people that their identity is not consistent with the country, with the nature of the country that they live in. I mean, it would be ideal. And for many of us, for whom religion is not important, it's not an important factor of our lives, we think this is the way it should be, that we should move beyond religion. And I agree with that. I agree with that on an individual level. For me, whether a temple is constructed here, whether a temple is constructed in Mathura, honestly, I believe that there are far greater priorities for this country in terms of healthcare, in terms of environment, in terms of so many issues, education, that this country needs to handle, rather than trying to, again, control Z history. However, I do realize that I am in the minority in this country when it comes to thinking in these terms. And this is the paradox of people who are always against fascism. You know, their main thing is everything is fascist. Guess what? When you think that your way is the right way, that is the fundamental tenet of fascism. And that's why communism and fascism, after some time, are indistinguishable from each other. And that's why communists and fascists have always gotten together, by the way, from World War II. It's because the communists won the World War II that the calling somebody a fascist is a pejorative. So one definite way you can basically tar or tarnish any idea or any person is to call that person a fascist. Calling that person a communist doesn't really carry that same amount. And people proudly declare themselves communists. I don't think people proudly declare themselves fascists anymore in this world. Or if they do, there will be severe consequences for them in society. But people do, they do have pictures of Che Guevara on their Facebook pages. They do declare themselves communists. But in terms of the number of people they have killed, communists have killed more people than fascists. And the reason is there's no distinction between the two. Both of these philosophies ultimately are predicated on the fact that what they believe is the way forward. And this is also true for most fundamentalist strains of religion. It is that their way of right and wrong, their way of looking at the world is correct and everybody else is wrong. And the only thing that opposes this is true liberalism, which says that no, I will of course do my part in a democratic society to win people over to my opinion. I will do whatever I want. However, I also recognize that there will be significant portions of the country or whatever organizational unit that I'm part of, which will see the world in a fundamentally different way than I do. I just, you know, Rana Ayub wrote a Washington Post article. Obviously, you know, her articles get increasingly anti-India government. And this time, at least she is very honest in when she says that, you know, this shows not only how, you know, Modi is a big fascist. And of course, I mean, that's nothing new about it, but that Indians are also, by that she obviously means Hindus, are obviously also fascists. So at least she's, I would at least give her props for pinning it on the right people. At least she's recognizing the fact that what the government is doing is the democratic mandate. And if she thinks this is fascism, then what she's doing is she's calling the entire country fascist. Now, this is again the problem. This criminalization of the Hindu identity is precisely why people, once you start taking one community's desire for an identity and say, no, you can't do it, everybody else can, it's just not going to fly. And what you're going to do is you're going to embolden the fundamentalists within that group once you keep on doing this. And this is exactly what has happened. Now, I am not, and that's the main thing. For me, any kind of fundamentalism, any kind of religion-driven, I am fundamentally, personally against organized religion. I'm against fascism. I'm against communism. I'm against any dogmatic belief system that looks upon the world through a predefined lens of what is right and what is wrong. That to me is fundamentally anti-intellectual, where you're basically delegating the work of thinking to somebody else. Marx has said this. Bal Thackeray has said this. Golwalkar has said this. Mahatma Gandhi has said this. What do you say? What do your principles say? What are your rules? That is the more important thing. Any kind of religion, whether it be the cult of anti-fascism, because ultimately anything that you don't agree with is now fascist for a certain set of people. Why there is in America, there's a group called Antifa, which then goes out and commits acts of lawlessness, which are not much different from what the fascists in Germany did, by the way. Which just goes to show that ultimately there is no fascism, communism, religious fundamentalism. They are just extreme ways of taking what people know to be correct, identifying those that do not agree with that worldview, and labeling them with something, whether it be a kafir, whether it be an anti-national, whether it be a tukre-tukre gang, whether it be a fascist, whether it be a communist, it doesn't matter. Everybody will have their pejorative labels and they'll just affix it on those that they don't agree with. That is the problem. So moving on to Sushant Singh Rajput. Right. So again, I'll repeat, I don't want to comment on who's guilty, what happened. I want to comment on something that my favorite journalist, Rajdeep Sardar, my second favorite journalist after Ashutosh, of course, said. So play that clip.
सब पर सवाल उठ गए हैं कि आप किस तरह की कार्रवाई करते हैं, किसके इशारों पर करते हैं, क्या ये वाकई आप स्वतंत्र कार्रवाई कर पाते? Let's be honest also, Saurabh, Sushant Singh Rajput was not such a big star कि इतना दबाव आना चाहिए पुलिस पर, right? अगर इतना दबाव आया है तो क्यों आया है? कौन है वो?
So, to those of you just heard that clip, the fact is, there's something which he says that he wasn't that big a star for such political pressure in his case. So if you look at the entire interview, which is available from Lallan Top, he says a lot of things. He's saying, essentially, of course, we know Sardar Sai is ideological slant, so there's nothing really surprising there. But and again, I try not to talk about individual personalities, especially for people like Sardar Sai, for whose opinions I've already said many times, but I have to, because first of all, there's something here that I have heard a few times on social media, and that's why I want to handle that part of the argument. The first is that Sushant Singh Rajput wasn't all that big. I don't think people say that. I don't think people are that heartless to even say that. They might be feeling that, except it takes a special kind for Mr. Sardar Sai to say that. But the fact is, let's just look at the fact that he wasn't that big a star. That's factually not true. That's just factually not true. Given that he is a young male star, usually male stars in India have a very, very long shelf life. Given that he's early in his career, and given that he had already delivered a fair number of hits, including Chichore, which is a small banner movie with no big stars, there's definitely at his age, just compare him to other stars. Who would Sardar Sai consider to be a pretty big star by his definition? If he was alive today and among his contemporaries, who would he consider to be? Obviously, he cannot be compared to a Salman or a Shah Rukh Khan. I mean, these guys were Sushant Singh Rajput when I was young in the 90s.
Right. I mean, I would play Sushant in the same ring as, let's say, Varun Dhawan.
Yes. So compare, this is the, so in the 90s, if let's take an example of Shah Rukh Khan. I think all of us will agree, whether we like him or not, whether he like it, that he's a very big star. But in the 90s, he was giving turkeys like Zamana Diwana. When he was Sushant Singh Rajput's age, he was giving Zamana Diwana and a string of flop movies. Okay, so this is same with Salman Khan. Amir Khan was acting in Mela. He was acting in Tum Mere Ho. So these people, if you look at the mix of hits versus flops, Sushant Singh Rajput's, the data on Sushant Singh Rajput wouldn't be any different from the career trajectory of a Shah Rukh Khan or an Amir Khan or a Salman Khan. So straight off the bat, from a data point of view, Rajdeep Sardar Sai is 100% wrong. He was pretty big. Now, the second part of it is, and I've heard this before, is that if people really cared for Sushant Singh Rajput, then why didn't they go to see his movies? The thing is, they care for Sushant Singh Rajput in his death. That is the main thing. This is like saying, if people cared for Nirbhaya, why didn't, you know, why was she with this one person that night? Why didn't anybody pick her up in their car? That's because it's the fate that she met that day. And I also heard somebody saying, well, hasn't this something like Nirbhaya happened before? Yes, it has happened before and it has happened since. But there are certain things which catch people's attention, which have that emotional connect to people. In the case of Sushant Singh Rajput, it is the circumstances of his death. It is the fact that he was a big star. There is no denying the fact that he was a big star. Obviously, his body of work cannot be compared to an Akshay Kumar or Salman Khan. He's not that old. That's the thing. You know, if he had 10, 15, 20 years, I'm pretty sure he would have reached there. Maybe not that level, but he would have reached pretty close. Who knows? Nobody can ever say where he would have gone. But the fact is that he had a number of good projects at hand. He had given solo hits and he was doing fairly good. Again, why didn't people watch his movies? Well, why didn't people watch Zamana Diwana, for instance, if they really liked Shah Rukh Khan so much? Why didn't I watch Zamana Diwana in a movie theater if I liked Shah Rukh Khan? And I did. So this kind of logic is not only fallacious, it's idiotic in a way. But it's the circumstance of his death and what happened before his death that have made people feel a sort of empathy with him. And to call this, as Sardesai did, an IT cell, which obviously IT cell is BJP. It seems that there is no other IT cell, apparently. No other political party has an IT cell. And obviously for Rajdeep Sardesai, in his world, the only IT cell he possibly comes up against is the BJP IT cell, because I'm pretty sure the Congress and the AAP, all of them like what he says. So I don't think he can be forgiven for thinking that the only one party has an IT cell, given the way his ideology bends. But the fact that he thinks that all of this is an IT cell creation goes to show that for somebody who is a major news anchor, how absolutely 100% clueless he is about the news he covers. Not only does he know virtually nothing about Sushant Singh Rajput, of course, that doesn't prevent him from commenting on it, but also the fact that he doesn't even know that something like this, when you have advertisements in California on a billboard of Sushant Singh Rajput, that this cannot be just an IT cell thing. If the IT cell was this powerful, then they would have destroyed Deepika Padukone's career. Okay, they can't. The IT cell has limits. Unless there is a groundswell of emotion from people, they just, yeah, sure, the IT cell can push it, but they can't push it beyond a certain level. They just can't. So to dismiss this as an IT cell phenomenon is churlish to the extreme. Now, the reason why Sushant Singh Rajput, and that's for me is the more interesting thing, is the fact is that this person, before whatever it is that happened to him, there were a number of salacious blind items that were put out in his name. There were a number of strategic projects that he lost. And there is an undoubted great hastiness to declare it a suicide driven by depression. There was an undue haste. And here is where the real rub is. The people who are asking us to accept that it was suicide, these are the same people who are immensely skeptical of the police when it is about evidence against, let's say, Gautam Navlaka, when it is about the investigation of Gauri Lankesh. All the time, apparently, the police are doing cover-ups. They are all in the leagues of politicians. They are obviously very inefficient and they're all corrupt, but not in this case. In this case, they're absolutely 100% right that within hours they declared it to be a suicide. Even when every relative of Sushant Singh Rajput, and now you have Print India providing the kind of, you know, cover fire, saying that, you know, the reprehensible article about basically attacking Sushant Singh Rajput's parents now. This is where we have come up with it. And people say, why has this become so important? I mean, you have come to a place where you're basically attacking the family of someone who has died like this, whether it be suicide or whether it be murder. In my mind, I don't know. But whatever it is, that you have media houses having the lack of sensitivity to attack his parents at this point of time. Now, some of the things that have, you know, the attacks on Riya Chakravarti are also condemnable. Absolutely. But we should, and that is why I do not want to talk about these things, about the actual facts of the case, because we don't know. And that there are both channels, and there's definitely the Republics and the Times are definitely spicing it up. They're also creating a narrative for which they don't really have a lot of proof. And that's absolutely true. However, the important thing is, in this case, is that the victim matters. That there has to be a level of sensitivity in coverage. If you are saying that the opposite side, the Arnabs of the world, the Goswami, Arnab Goswamis of the world, make sure I am not Arnab Goswami. The Arnab Goswamis of the world are being insensitive. They are, you know, attacking Riya Chakravarti. They're attacking Mahesh Bhatt. Oh, boo, hoo, hoo. If that's the thing, then it behoves you not to attack Sushant Singh Rajput's family. I think that's the minimum amount of sensitivity that one can expect. This, to me, is worth commenting on. And the last thing that I want to talk about is with what Mr. Sardesai said, that he wasn't big enough. And that kind of comes to the crux of the problem that people like Sushant Singh Rajput face, is that people like Sardesai, who control the gates of what it means to be inside the circle of privilege, people who his dad was the biggest Indian cricketer before Sunil Gavaskar. And, you know, he was the lord of Mumbai cricket, which was the only cricket at that point of time. So he comes from, you know, may not be very rich, but he comes from an immensely well-connected family. So for him, and that's why, you know, he had an interview on nepotism with Javed Akhtar, his son, and his daughter. I mean, the sheer stupidity of the optics is lost on him. The fact that at a time when everybody is so aware of the privilege that he brings, possibly, again, with respect to Javed Akhtar, sure, Javed Akhtar is a scriptwriter. He might not be in the league of a Bonnie Kapoor, but in terms of influence, there are very few people in Bombay who are more influential than Javed Akhtar. So obviously his progeny will have influence. And we've talked about this before. There's nothing wrong about that either. They said, you know, all of us have internalized privilege. So when we point at somebody and say nepotism, it's just that guy has more privilege than I do. And somebody else can point to me and say nepotism. And it's the same thing. Yeah, sure. I have some privilege too. So again, I'm not going to get into that. That's why I've maintained for a long time that this nepotism debate is fundamentally Khokla at its core. But the problem is that, you know, that whole big people, you know, that hurts, because that hurts me personally, because I have, as an author, and I've said this before, I have been made to feel small because I wasn't the son of a big person. I've faced that. And the fact that I have brushed it off and moved on is just because it's me. A lot of other people wouldn't. And the fact that this person, you know, he treats a random NRI at Times Square very differently than how he deals with Mukesh Ambani, Pranab Mukherjee, and Raj Thackeray. You know, then he squirms in his seat when these guys lash out back at him, because he knows he can't do anything to them, but he knows he can do something to a random NRI at Times Square. He's highly obsequious to Sonia Gandhi during his interview, but he's dismissive of Modi, even when he's a chief minister. And this might be difficult for people like him who have privilege to understand, but, you know, we do. This is the same guy, by the way, who publicly is skeptical about Justice Lawyer. Okay, he's publicly skeptical about a lot of facts about investigations, unless and except when Mumbai police is concerned. And he says, you know, I'm not saying Mumbai police are perfect, but then why should we accept everything that Mumbai police, this is just a rider that he puts after everything, after the whole conspiracy, after this is all elections, this is all politics, this is all about news media. He himself is part of the news media, and his own organization, by the way, carries as much sensationalism as everybody else. So before he criticizes others, he maybe should look at his own newsroom. Anyways, so the fact is that this person, and again, I want to not focus on him, but I want to focus on the mentality that says that if you really like Sushant Singh Rajput, you should have seen his movies more. It doesn't work like that. Sushant Singh Rajput is who he is because of his death, because of the circumstances surrounding his death, and because people find in that circumstances something about themselves. The fact that many of us who were not born into privilege have faced something like this. We have been bullied. We have been treated. I can say I have been treated differently because I wasn't the son of somebody of importance. Because I realize that when I go to a lit fest, it is all about whose son and daughter you are in these places. You can either sell an insane amount of books and be a Chetan Bhagat, and you know, it's good that he can. But then for many other people, it's all a matter of this person's father is an important IAS officer. This person's father is a politician. That's exactly how respect is garnered in these places. And so obviously, when something like what has happened to Sushant Singh Rajput happens, their defense mechanism is also triggered by them associating themselves with this situation, except subconsciously, they're associating themselves with the opposite side that most people are. As I was saying, it's important, and that's really the focus of what I was trying to say, is that the reaction of Sushant Singh Rajput, the reason why it's such a big issue for both sides of the spectrum, on one side, the Sardesais of the world, the Bhats of the world, and there are people who are, you know, many people whose names we don't know, but they are who they are because of their last names. Now, as I've repeatedly said, pretty much all of us are what we are because of our last names, in a way. Because I do believe that privilege is invisible to those that have it. However, there are some people who have faced something akin to what it is now being revealed that Sushant Singh Rajput faced. And that is where the significance or the impact or the empathy that people feel for him comes up, and which something like Mr. Sardesai is unable to understand, which is why he blames the IT cell for basically creating something that doesn't exist. Again, I'll say the IT cell does not have that amount of power. The BJP IT cell doesn't have that, because otherwise they have had like boycott campaigns on Deepika Padukone after JNU, and I'm pretty sure it has done nothing in terms of her career. Because ultimately, nobody really bought that. Outside, of course, the echo chamber of the IT cell, I don't think that's something which the people really bought. You know, people kind of ignored the whole JNU thing. But this is not something that people are ignoring. This is different. This is different in the way Nirbhaya was different. And you can obviously try to legislate and say, why hasn't this happened to Jia Khan? Maybe it should have happened then. Maybe if this had happened after Jia Khan, we wouldn't have had this. But there is no doubt that as the facts come out, that it is not a simple suicide. That's pretty sure. And even if it is, then there's nothing that what makes it suspicious is the inordinate rush to declare it as such. And the absolute
You didn't bring up even the point, Arnab, about his therapist coming and breaking a patient-doctor confidential.
Yes. So we had even the sight of his therapist, not a doctor, but his therapist, coming on media, coming on Barkha Dutt, and regrettably Barkha providing her that opportunity to speak about somebody's mental health. For the conversation between a therapist and her patient, and I use the word patient in air quotes because a therapist is technically not a doctor, is still covered by an expectation of confidentiality, which is even more important given that the other person in this conversation is no longer alive. The fact that a therapist would come on the media and try to influence the course of an investigation, and by doing so, basically break the very notion of patient-client confidentiality, perhaps attests more than anything else to the absolute desperation to show that it was a suicide. there can be nothing, there is no other means. And it could be that it's a suicide. And again, there is no data. One can speculate, but one thing is definite, is that there is, that the data on the other side is also doesn't line up. That there is definitely things which were going on, which could or may not have led to his death, that we do not know. And it is also true that there are media houses which are running it, flogging it for TRPs. And that's also true. And that's well known. They do it for everything. But it is also true that the empathy and the connect that this issue is having in the hearts of people isn't an IT cell created phenomenon. That there is a significant portion of people who see in Sushant Singh Rajput's struggles and ultimately in his death, something about themselves, something about being humiliated, something about not being in the cool club, not being allowed in. And people on television with a lifetime of privilege and with very, very good last names, in the sense that that last name is really what has defined their success, when they come on television and try to push the other narrative, perhaps because they also feel an empathy, but on the opposite side, what that does more than anything else is widen this divide. That actually makes things worse when you look at the people on the other side. And then you realize this is not a question about finding out the truth. This is a question of defending a way of life. It's a question of defending a very small circle of privilege. It's not that even people understand what it means for those who are privileged. It's not that somebody is going to take away, Javed Akhtar's, Farhan Akhtar's movies. It's not that anybody is actually coming for them or this. They will have no loss of privilege. Alia Bhatt will not get movies taken away from her. Alia Bhatt herself is a very good actor. So that all that is also true. It's not that just because she has Bhatt on the end of her name doesn't make her a bad actor or doesn't make her deserving. She's definitely deserving of what she has achieved. But it's also true that she's achieved it because she has that last name. That's also something which we should accept. We should also accept the fact that she is a very good actor. And there's nothing contradictory about that. But if you believe that the reason Mumbai Indians win is because of Akash Ambani's pep talks, if you believe that he is the inspiration behind Rohit Sharma and Mumbai Indians, then that is the problem, right? There are people who are just something because of their last name and nothing else. And there are people who have a last name and who have leveraged it, but also they're also talented. They also deserve what they have got. So both of it is there. And the problem is the first and the people in the first group use the people in the second group to justify their existence. That is something which you should always note. So Alia Bhatt is the example, always. That's the example that's followed. It's never the other people. It's never, why does Farhan Akhtar get to sing, for instance? Nobody ever asks that question. He doesn't have a voice to sing. Why does he get to sing? Because he's Farhan Akhtar. That's why he gets to sing. That's why he gets to make a movie called Rock On and makes to make a sequel to that. See, that is privilege. So when people say it's a question of merit, privilege gets you through the door, but it doesn't make you survive. That's not true. That's not true at all. And nobody's saying that things will change. This is the way the world has been. However, please, please don't, at least for the sake of optics, try to attack Sushant Singh Rajput's family at this point of time. That doesn't mean that we should not condemn baseless attacks on Riya Chakravarti, that the fact is we don't know the facts. Let the facts come out. Let the people have their days in court. Now, I'm pretty sure this won't happen ultimately. Ultimately, given the way things work in India, especially if there are influential parties involved, this will all be covered up. There will not be a day in court for any of them. But when I see Jia Khan's parents, they still struggle. They still struggle to find justice for their daughter. And it's heartbreaking for me as a parent to see that. And it's unfortunate that these other people, that they still, you know, judge whether something is worth doing based on how big that person is or wasn't. I mean, it's tragic that somebody would think like this. That somebody would think that he wasn't that big a star for which politicians would exert pressure. That's, again, as I said, this was not true also. But the reason why politicians are exerting pressure is not because Sushant Singh was big or small, but because he has triggered a groundswell of emotions. And politicians, if any, they will not go against their constituents. That's the thing. So rather than making that connection, Mr. Sardesai seeks to delegitimize the genuine emotions of people who feel a kinship towards Sushant Singh Rajput. That is sad and that is tragic. So this is why I wanted to talk about this, not so much about the facts of the case or about who's guilty or what happened or sansani, nothing of that sort, to answer your initial question. And that's it for today. Thank you, everybody.
Right. So that's the podcast for today. And also, as we approach our 100th episode, that's coming up in a month or so, we are looking for more feedback and on things like what did you like, what do you want more of, what do you want less of, what don't you like. So just let us know. You can tweet Arnab or me or even email us at appodcast@foursquare.net. And we really look forward to your comments. And until next time, take care. Bye-bye. But it's been 48 minutes, slightly okay. On the shorter end.